Hello and welcome to What the Faux Travel Podcast with Nick and Amy. This is Series 3, Episode 12, and this one is all about Israel and Palestine.
Welcome to the final episode of Series 3. This is going to be a very interesting one. I'm looking forward to it and dreading it a little bit, but it's going to be good. But first, where are we now, Amy? We are in a very, very special place, aren't we?
Yeah, so we are in a place called Parque Nacional Chapada Diamantina.
Wow.
Which means Chapada Diamantina National Park. And I think it's one of my favourite places in the entire world.
Yeah, so we're still in Brazil. We're just, as Amy said, we're in a national park. There are a few towns in the national park you can stay and you can do walks and treks and swim in like natural pools. And we were at one place with a natural water slide. This place is incredible. It looks like a movie set. I can't believe it's real. We've never even heard of it before we came to Brazil. But it's amazing, so we are having a very nice time here. It's beautiful.
We will definitely tell you more on our Brazil episode that will be coming up in Series 4. And I think it's quite apt that we're talking about Israel and Palestine here, because I think we've met more Israelis here than we did in Israel.
Yeah, I can't believe it. It's a bit like going around Southeast Asia and bumping into Australians. Like, it just seems to be that this is where Israelis come. We found out there's a very popular Israeli Facebook group. So what happens is, because in Israel they have to do national service, once they finish their national service, they then travel around the year, you know, go crazy, have some fun, and they all follow this Facebook group apparently, which tells them to come here.
Yeah, because not many people from England really know about it. Like you said, we only found out about this place when we arrived in Brazil, and a lot of local Brazilian people were telling us about it. But yeah, we'll stop talking about this place because this episode is all about Israel and Palestine, and we will tell you about this national park on the Brazil episode in Series 4, like I said. Now, on the final episode of Series 3, we are going to be talking about Israel and Palestine. So the things that that will involve. We will talk about Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Tel Aviv. We will, of course, have game show facts and language lessons with a guy called Roger, who we'll introduce you to. He is going to be teaching us Hebrew. We will meet a guy called Ibrahim, who is in Bethlehem in Palestine, and he will explain the situation over there. This is a tough episode to cover, guys, so stick with us because you'll learn a lot from this one. But we'll also have some fun because our game this month is Hummus Be Joking. Get it? Hummus? Joking? Hummus? Joking food? Hummus Be Joking?
We get it.
And we'll be marking the countries out of 10 and telling you how to get involved with Patreon at the end. Okay, let's start with some shout-outs, Nick.
We're actually going to start with hate mail, Amy.
Oh, really? I didn't think we got any hate mail.
It's not really hate mail.
Oh, okay.
But we heard from Mimi Lee. That's postcards from Mimi on Instagram. She listened to our food episode and she said, guys, what are you playing at? Chicken Parmigiano? I can't say that word. She's like, chicken Parmigiano is not from Australia. I think we actually said we thought it might be Italian, but it was one of our listeners, Charlie Keep, who said the best food she's had is chicken Parmigiano in Australia.
I thought it was Parmigiana.
It might be. I don't know. But she was like, come on, guys, it's from Middlesbrough in England. Who knew? So we got to put the record straight. So thanks for letting us know. Go on, Middlesbrough, up the Smoggies. English people will get that. You probably won't get that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's a nickname for people from Middlesbrough, Smoggies.
Is it a football thing?
I guess, kind of.
Smoggies? I've never heard that in my life.
Because Middlesbrough is very industrial and very, like, smoggy and polluted.
Okay.
But big up Middlesbrough. So they invented, apparently, chicken Parmigiano or Parmigiana.
Good to know. Thank you very much.
All right, let's start the shout-outs with some Patreon shout-outs. We've got some new people on board. Big love and respect goes to Jon Dronic. That is actually producer Jon, if you guys remember, way back on our Copenhagen episode.
Yay!
Thank you, Jon. Chris Searle has also jumped on board. We've met Chris a few times. We also worked together on that video we made for our Argentina game.
Yeah, he edited it very kindly.
So Chris has done so much for the show already. And Brad Wells. So like you three,
You've come on board with the Faux family. You're helping us keep going. Thank you so much.
And we really hope you're enjoying your rewards with the videos and postcards or whatever tier you're set up for. We hope you're enjoying it all.
Continuing the shout outs. First of all, Lisa from the Big Travel Podcast. She put together a list of the best 8 travel podcasts for 2019. And this is actually for her blog, which is 101 Holidays. Okay. And we made it. We're on the list.
Yay!
It doesn't actually say if it's in order, but we are actually number one. But it doesn't say if it's actually... I don't know if it's in a particular order or not, but she included us. So thank you so much. And yeah, Lisa also makes, like I said earlier, the Big Travel Podcast. So also worth checking out if you like all things travel.
Thanks, Lisa.
And we heard from Ayush Vijay on Twitter. He said, congrats for making this list that I just spoke about and that our podcast is very unique. Thank you very much.
Aww.
We also heard from Ivan Brocco. Ivan said that he's been listening to us on dog walks and we've been reminding him of his hitchhiking days around Europe. I like to know how people listen, so we join him on the dog walk. I like that. So thanks for getting in touch.
Yeah, like let us know if you like... When we record, I don't expect you to be walking the dog. So like, it'd be interesting to know how you listen. So yeah, let us know.
Yeah, I think we get a lot of commutes and a lot of gym goers. But let us know if there's any unique ways you listen.
So we have some very fit listeners then, do we?
Very fit. You guys are buff. We also heard from Claire Taylor on Instagram. She said, I'm going to the northeast coast of Brazil next month.
Yes.
And that's going to be the start of a South America trip. And she said she's been listening and loving all of our podcasts so far. Can't wait to hear more about Brazil. And she also said, we are one of the best travel podcasts out there with all the games and other segments, as well as tips and facts. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Claire.
Yeah, thank you. Obrigado para você.
Oh, wow. That was good. Very nice Portuguese. That's twice now you've spoken Portuguese. Amy's actually
twice.
Doing...
Twice?
Yeah, you were... National...
Oh, that's a name.
Bagueia, Diamantia. Her Portuguese is coming on really well. We also heard from Damien on Twitter. Damien said, really enjoying the podcast, and it's about time there was a podcast with profanities and quizzes. Thank you, Damien. That's what we're all about. And finally, Phoebe on Twitter said, honestly, listening to What the Faux Travel Podcast at work is getting me through my 88 days farm work. It's hard graft.
Oh my goodness, that timing couldn't have been any better. When you said farm work, I looked up and I saw the cow. Can you see the cow?
Oh, wow, yeah.
So we're sitting on the balcony of our house that we're staying in this national park, and actually like 4 or 5 cows have just turned up in like the garden.
Oh, and there's a farmer lady as well. Yeah.
What timing.
It's all kicking off. But anyway, we're assuming that Phoebe's in Australia, I assume so. But go on, Phoebe, you can do it. Hopefully we can help get you through your farm work.
Sorry, Phoebe, I just interrupted your shout out there. But there were some really good shout outs this time. I enjoyed those.
Thanks, guys, for getting in touch.
Oh, look at that cow. It's like fully black and then the back of it is looks like a traditional cow where it's got the spots.
It's like the, what's the ice cream? The really famous ice cream.
Ben and Jerry's?
Yeah, it's a Ben and Jerry's cow. Should we carry on?
Cool. Right, I'm going to stop looking at the cows now. Let's talk. Because, Nick, you have to do your game show facts. And this is the one time I don't envy you, you know, looking up the facts for this one, just because it's quite difficult to explain the current situation and the history of Israel and Palestine. So without further ado, good luck, and I hope it goes well for you.
Yeah, so before the facts, we're actually going to have a little history lesson.
Oh, I didn't know about this.
But
okay.
We need to, because people, I mean, before we went, we didn't know what was going on there. So people won't know what's happening in Israel and Palestine. So a brief history lesson. I'm going to whiz through this. This is really condensed. I've watched so many videos and done so much research on this. Ask me anything about it and I can tell you. So
this isn't game show facts.
No, but I'm going to get into game show facts. Brief history lesson, kids.
Okay.
Palestine, as we know it today, originated from a map drawn up by the British at the end of World War I. Britain took control of this land in the Middle East in 1917 after defeating the Ottoman Empire in World War I. Okay, Ottoman Empire from Turkey. We're going to talk about that in the next episode, actually. Right, Britain starts to give support to a national home for Jewish people in Palestine, but insists that nothing shall be done to harm the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities. Okay? So Britain limits Jewish migration, but after the Nazi Holocaust of World War II, there is mass Jewish migration to British Palestine. And to prevent Jewish and Arab conflict, the UN, the United Nations, recommends the division of land, aka Jewish Israel and Arabic Palestine, but states that Jerusalem would be a UN-controlled zone. Okay, so neither would control Jerusalem. The majority of the world voted in favour of this, but the Arab countries did not.
Right. Isn't it insane that, yeah, the world are voting on what should be done with this land, even though the world doesn't own it? It's just very strange.
Yeah, it's all, and this is all, everything I'm saying, by the way, a lot has happened in between all these bullet points I'm reading out, but I can't read it all because I'd be here all day. But lots has gone on. But you're right, it is crazy. Okay, so the Arabs weren't happy about this. So, and then they were further angered when in 1948, Israel declares independence as British rule ends. This triggers the first Arab-Israeli war, with five of Israel's Arab neighbours launching attacks on them. It was like countries like Syria and Iraq and Jordan, they declared war on Israel. Okay. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were forced out or fled their homes during this war. So lots of people were displaced. Israel actually won this war somehow. It's very complicated how they won it, but they actually won it. And then what happened was they claimed even more land. So that means the official division of Palestinian and Israeli land, which was recommended by the UN, that never happened. Okay? In 2002... Israel starts to build a wall to stop armed Palestinians entering Israel and committing acts of terrorism.
So that's kind of, sorry to interrupt, but that's kind of like the Berlin Wall, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Proper, we'll go into that. Proper, like, segregating people. Some say it's an illegal wall, some say it's not illegal. Okay.
But yeah, we'll go into that later.
We will. This wall was built in an area called the West Bank, a disputed area of land away from mainland Israel, which used to be controlled by Jordan, where both Israelis and Palestinians live, but separately in different settlements. Some settlements are under Israeli control, others are under the Palestinian Authority control. Right, it's getting complicated. We're almost at the end. The disputed land of Gaza in the south of Israel is now controlled by an Palestinian extremist group called Hamas, who split from the Palestinian Authority. Basically, Hamas thought that the Palestinians weren't doing enough to defeat Israel.
I have a question. What do you mean by ex-authority? Because Hamas is still doing things now, aren't they, in Gaza?
Yes, so what Hamas is, because I couldn't really say that Hamas are Palestinian people. They technically are, but they're a group of Palestinians that broke away from the rest of Palestine because basically they wanted to do more extremist things.
Right, okay.
Okay, so they're kind of separate from Palestine, even though they're from Palestine originally. So basically, Palestinians want their own independent country, but they are currently under Israeli occupation, and movement of Palestinian people around Israel is restricted and monitored. Violence has and does occur on both sides, and when this happens, Palestinians are generally worse off due to Israel's strong military presence. Finally, to this day, Israel has been locked in conflict with the Palestinians and its Arab neighbours over ownership of land considered holy by many Jews, Christians and Muslims. Peace talks have failed and violence has failed. So what is the solution?
Okay, I learned a lot there, Nick. Okay.
Good. So Amy, I'm asking you, what's the solution?
Oh, right, okay.
No, I'm not.
So all the governments can't work it out, but Amy Thompson, hello.
We'll give you, at the end of the episode, we'll give you the solution. But yeah, like I said, in between all the things I just said, lots of stuff has happened. There's been lots of tit for tat and backstabbing and all sorts of political things have gone on. But that's basically where we are today.
Right, okay. Thank you very much. So is it now time for Game Show Facts?
Yeah, and then I'm going to lie down.
Perhaps a little bit lighter, this one.
Oh, this is lighter. Let's bring it up, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Play that funky music. Israel is a small but densely populated country on the eastern shore of the Mediterranean Sea and is the only state in the world with a majority Jewish population. Capital city is Jerusalem. Hebrew and Arabic are the official languages, but most Israelis also speak English. In regards to its population, Israel has the highest ratio of college degrees. The same goes for the ratio of its museums and startup companies. It has the highest rate of entrepreneurship among women and people over 55 in the world, and boasts a strong and sophisticated economy. Motorola developed the cell phone in Israel. The first antivirus software for computers was created in Israel in 1979. Israel is a multicultural country, and to demonstrate this, in 2013, the winner of Miss Israel was from Ethiopia. Israel was the first country to ban underweight models. Palestine. The population of Palestinians is around 10 million, but these people are spread over several Arab countries. Palestinians claim that Jerusalem is the capital city. Most of eastern Jerusalem is part of the Palestinian territory in the West Bank. The primary language is Arabic. Palestinians celebrate Christmas three times a year. As per the Western tradition, on the 25th of December, the Greek Orthodox Christmas date on January the 6th, and as per the Armenians on the 8th of January. The most famous man ever in history was Palestinian by birth, Jesus Christ.
Oh my God, I did not know that Christmas fact.
Three Christmases, wow.
Because I knew about the date of January 6th, because here in South America, they do something on that day. And I think they give presents again or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Something along those lines. I don't know exactly what it is. But yeah, I've never heard of the 8th of January being a date.
Yeah, what did I say? The Armenian Christmas, 8th of January.
Oh, okay.
So they're all quite close together. So December and January is a very busy time in Palestine.
Yeah. Oh, that was very interesting. Thank you very much, Nick.
Thanks.
Now, after all of that learning, you've got some more learning to do, because we are going to do language lessons with a guy called Roger. Now, Roger owns a hostel called Roger's House Hostel. and he taught us a little bit of Hebrew. But I must warn you, I am not in this interview. This is because I had, I don't know, tonsillitis, I think it was. I'm not really too sure.
Yeah, you weren't very well, were you? You were out of action for a few days. So
yeah,
I had to handle this myself.
I mean, this is just Nick's show, isn't it, this one? It's all about you. So we've done a bit of Arabic on the show before for language lessons. So for this time, we thought we'd go full Hebrew for Israel. Nick started this by asking Roger how to say hello in Hebrew.
Hello in Hebrew is shalom.
And how do you say thank you?
Toda.
How about excuse me? Or like, if either excuse me to get out of the way, and then like, oh, sorry if you've done something bad.
Okay, so excuse me to get out of the way is slachli or silchili. Slachli is when you say it to a man. Silchili is when you say it to a woman. And if you want to say I'm sorry, you say ani mitzta'er for a man when you're a man. And if you're a woman, you say ani mitzta'eret.
And how do you order a beer? So say, can I have a beer, please?
Okay, if you want to order a beer in Israel, you just say, "Efshar bevakasha lazmin bira."
Could you say that again slower, please?
"Efshar bevakasha lazmin bira."
When you ask for something in Israel, is it common to say please at the end or not? Because in England, we say please and thank you for everything.
It really depends on the situation, because Israelis are more direct. But it's more nice to say please, so you can add to the end of the sentence bevakasha. That's please. Bevakasha.
It's quite a difficult language, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite unique. Yeah.
So it's quite different with the masculine and feminine. So for example, in Brazil where we are now, I would say obrigada because I'm a woman, and you'd say obrigado because you're a man. But there they say it to who they're speaking to, not who they are.
Right, it's like the other way around.
Yeah. But that's really interesting, and it's a difficult language to pronounce, I would say.
Very difficult. A lot of kha. Like, we don't have that sound in our language, do we?
No.
And I think a lot of people will already know, maybe from popular culture or from films, they'll know shalom. Is that?
And l'chaim.
Yeah, l'chaim.
Which means like cheers.
L'chaim's cheers. And yeah, what?
Shalom is hello.
That's right. That's what he said, didn't he? Mm. But yeah, that's the bit of Hebrew I knew before. But yeah, away from that, I didn't have any idea. And we're lucky that, like I said earlier in Game Show Facts, they do actually speak very good English. So to think, you know, it's standard for them to speak three languages, you know, Hebrew, a bit of Arabic and English. So it's very clever.
Mm, and I think they have my favourite thank you in the world.
Toda.
Toda. Yeah, it's a nice, easy one.
I like it. Better than Turkey's one. You'll hear that one next. That's the hardest thank you I've ever heard in my life.
He couldn't learn. It was too difficult.
Tekeşe ederim. Something like
Tekeşe
that.
Tekeşe ederim. Anyway, we'll talk about that on the next episode. Right, let's talk about a brief overview of our trip. Where did we go and kind of what sort of route did we take? So we came in from Jordan in the south, And we travelled through Aqaba, which is on the Jordan side of the border, and that took us to Eilat, which is on the Israeli side. So you drive through and then we travelled up towards Jerusalem. That was kind of like the first main city that we hit. And then we went over to the Palestinian side to Bethlehem, or as the Israelis would call it, Bethlehem. And then we travelled up to Tel Aviv, and which I thought was the capital city, but it's not. The capital city is Jerusalem. But yeah, we was in Tel Aviv for a while, and then we were thinking about going north because we've heard really great things. There's a place called Haifa, and it sounds beautiful, kind of, yeah, really green in the mountains towards the north. It's just very... just a great place to hike, basically. But we didn't have time, so we stopped in Tel Aviv and then traveled back into Jordan for a flight to Cyprus.
That's right. That was our trip. So yeah, three places we hit up, and all different and very interesting. So I guess, should we get to it then? Should we get to it? Well, before we get to Jerusalem, what I do want to say, do you remember crossing the border into Israel? Like, we got so many questions, didn't we, from the border staff. And I'm thinking, what's the big deal? Like, why are they so paranoid about who comes into their country, asking so many questions? But now we know all the facts that I spoke about earlier. Like, I get it, really. They're in conflict with all of their neighbours, so they're going to be suspicious of anyone coming in, especially from an Arab country. So I get it now. But it was quite intense, wasn't it?
But firstly, can I just ask you a question? Did you like Israel?
Oh, yeah. Both places we're about to talk about, I thought they were brilliant.
Yeah, me too. Like, I absolutely loved it. And I'm not sure what I was expecting, really. So this was never really in our plan to go to Israel. We were meant to spend 2 weeks in Jordan, but we did what we wanted to do quicker than we thought. So we thought, why not check out an extra country? So we popped into Israel and Palestine, and I'm so, so glad that we did. Just absolutely loved it. So yeah, like you were saying, that the places are very different. They're so diverse, like, the difference of Jerusalem, and then if you travel 45 minutes, you're then in Tel Aviv. And I fell asleep on our coach journey, and I thought I'd woken up in a different country. Yeah. It was so completely, not a different country, a different continent.
Yep.
It was just so unbelievably different. So at first, let's discuss Jerusalem.
Yeah, so probably my least favourite of the three places we went to, but still very interesting place. I'm glad we went. Of course, it's like a Mecca, almost literally. Well, not because Mecca's in Saudi Arabia, but it's almost, you know, it's the place to go for religious people, and not just Christians, like we said earlier, or Jewish, you know, Muslim people as well. There are very important places in Jerusalem for all these religions. So it is a very religious city. And the old part of the city, we walked around, we did a free walking tour, which I didn't really enjoy. The tour guide wasn't very good, but plus it was way more religious than I thought it was going to be. And he was mentioning stories like, I don't know, he'd say like, okay, we all know about the 12 apostles of Aphrodite, blah, 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 blah. That was the Greek god I just spoke about then. But you know, he made up all these words and all these people as if like we all knew the story. And most people on the tour did know these stories because they were religious people, like they were really into it. But because we were just there to learn and see the place, we didn't really know much of the backstories, I felt a bit lost. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you're right. So on the tour, he was, you know, just randomly quoting Genesis verses and chapters and all of this. And we were just very lost. But I guess, yeah, it's a place for religious people. So he would assume. But yeah, like you said, the tour guide wasn't great. We actually didn't interview him. It was the first tour that we did. We didn't interview the guide. He was very erratic and quite an angry person, actually.
Yeah.
But it was what it was.
Yeah, whatever. And then when he was telling some stories about, you know, what happened here thousands of years ago or whatever, I kept thinking, like, because when we do go to tours, they're very historical and they're telling stories that actually happened there. But when he's telling stories, I'm thinking, okay, so are you saying it actually happened, or are you talking like Bible stories, like talking snake and things like that? I couldn't get in my head what was kind of reality and wasn't. And I know that depends on what you believe, but that's why I was lost. I was getting confused between what really happened and Bible stories. So that kind of lost my interest a bit.
Yeah. And look, we don't want to offend anyone. We are atheists and that's what we believe. If you believe something different, then great. But you know, we know a lot of religious people who believe in God, believe in Jesus, but they don't believe in the stories per se of, like, how you say, the talking snake or the burning bush. Yeah, that those kind of stories, but they believe in some divine being.
Yeah.
And but they don't believe in those stories. But yeah, we for sure don't believe that, yeah, there was a talking snake and those sorts of things. But yeah, we don't want to sound like we're mocking anyone. But yeah, religion's a very difficult topic to cover, and that's why this was always going to be a difficult two countries to cover.
Yeah, but the old town itself was quite interesting because it's split into four quarters.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was interesting and it looked amazing. And when we say split into four quarters, it's not as if there's like borders and you need to show passport to get through. It's just it's split into four quarters. The Jewish quarter, the Muslim quarter,
the Christian quarter and the Armenian quarter.
Yeah, that's right.
So on the tour, he took us around them all. And our guide himself was born Jewish, but I think he said he was had a Christian faith.
I believe actually he said he is an atheist Jew, which which is probably something else we'll get into, because we thought Judaism was just a religion, but apparently it's not just a religion, it's almost like an identity, like you're born a Jew whether you're religious or not.
Yeah, it's like a nationality, I guess
that's what Israel is.
So yeah, we learned a lot. I would recommend going on a tour. The tour we actually went on was a Sandemans tour, which is a very big company for free walking tours. We always like to go with the local companies, like the startup ones. And like you said, in Game Show Facts, there's lots of startups in Israel. Yeah. But yeah, this was kind of our only choice in terms of times and things. And at the start of the tour, he mentioned that they get a lot of reviews, and he just kind of started having a go at us at the start saying, I've seen your reviews. I know everybody hates that I promote our other tours, that the tours that you pay for, but it's something I've got to do. I'll keep it to a minimum. And then for the rest of the tour, kept talking about, oh, I would tell you this, but that's on the paid tour. So if you want to know that, go on the paid tour. And it was just very commercial. And yeah, that was our opinion. And I can completely see why there's so many TripAdvisor reviews saying that. But I thought I'd just let you know that it's quite heavy in Jerusalem. So if you do have another option, I would probably say do that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's completely fair. But away from the old part of town, I did like the other part of Jerusalem much better. And where we stayed was on Jaffa Street. And I believe the Israelis probably pronounce it Jaffa Street, not Jaffa.
Jaffa, yeah.
Yeah. But that was like the main street. One end of it, you've got the old town. The other end, you've got the more new modern town, which I actually really liked. And there was some great food markets. I mean, Israel in general for food, like fresh food, produce, hummus in particular.
Oh my goodness.
Like off the chart, amazing. And there were some great food markets by day. And this is on Jaffa Street, the other end away from the old town, if you're in Jerusalem and you want to find it. And by night, these food markets just turn into bars and like DJs come out and music's playing and they know how to party in the holy city. Like it was
really
actually
did.
Good. Drinks are quite expensive in Jerusalem, but it was really good nightlife. So I was very impressed.
And while we're talking about Jerusalem and it being expensive, out of our whole trip so far, Jerusalem was the most expensive place for accommodation.
Oh, yeah, that hurt.
So there's a lot of hostels there. And some of you got in touch with us while we were there, actually. You sent us a message on Instagram saying, oh, go to this hostel. It's amazing.
Abraham Hostels.
Yes. And that got a lot of recommendations from you. But unfortunately, within our budget, we couldn't stay there because I think it worked out about 50 Great British pounds per night per bed
each.
In a dorm room.
Yeah. Whoa.
So as we're a couple, it actually worked out better. We went on booking.com, and even though it's not my favourite website...
It's too convenient.
But it is very convenient. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can check out our accommodation episode. I said that I'm not too keen on booking.com because a couple of times we've booked accommodation with them, turned up at the accommodation and found that they have double booked and not let us know. So there's a few complications with it, but whatever. Their website is very convenient. But on there, we booked the day before. We got a last minute discount because they wanted to fill the room in quite a posh hotel, actually, for £60 a night. And just so you know, our budget per day is 30 Great British pounds for both of us. So that's accommodation, food and activities, whatever we're doing. So that's double our budget already, just one night. So it was very, very expensive for accommodation.
It was, but like we said, an interesting place. So unless you've got anything to add, Amy, we're going to move on.
I just want to say about gluten-free foods and being a vegan or anything like that. So I'm not a vegan or a vegetarian, but they are the best country for that type of food, aren't they?
Israel, yeah, particularly Tel Aviv.
Yeah, and so I'm gluten-free and I found it really difficult in the other Arabic countries surrounding like Middle East countries to be gluten-free, but here was quite good. We found some falafel that was gluten-free, didn't we?
Yep, hummus, falafel, just brilliant, salads and fruit and veg. Yeah, really, really good.
Yeah, and like you said, Jaffa Street, definitely recommend that. If you can stay on Jaffa Street or nearby, then you're in the right area. There is, so as Nick said in his Game Show Facts earlier, Jerusalem is broken down into two. So you've got Palestine and Israel, and you can stay on both sides. So we stayed on Jaffa Street for a few days, and then we moved to the Palestinian side to kind of get a feel for both sides. Now, we'll explain later that we really loved Bethlehem, and I'd say that which is in Palestine, and I'd say that's one of my favourite. But in terms of Jerusalem, I definitely preferred the Israeli side.
Yeah, it's true. It was a very different feel. Who knows if it was any more or less dangerous in the Palestinian side, but there's just a different feel about it. Mm. But yeah, I would agree. We're very honest. But yeah, and like we're going to say soon, Bethlehem was amazing. But yeah, for Jerusalem, I'd say the Israeli side on Jaffa Street is probably the best place to stay. Oh, and before we do move on from Jerusalem, we'll just mention that's where you can see the very famous Wailing Wall.
Yes, of course. Yeah, so we saw this on our free walking tour. Now, like we said, I'm not a religious person, but I was very excited to see the Wailing Wall because it's something you learn about in school. It's a little bit like the River Nile for me. It was just one of these things that I heard about a lot, and it's just strange to see it in person. I was like, wow, like it's actually there in front of me. So if you don't know, the Wailing Wall is also called the Western Wall, and it's the most religious site in the world for Jewish people. It's located in the old city of Jerusalem, like we said. Thousands of people journey to the wall every year to visit and recite prayers. Now, the wall is split kind of into three parts now. So you've got the male side, the female side, because they're separated, and then you have a compromise section as well. Now, this is because there were a group of women that protested there for a very, very long time. Every day were there protesting, and they said that they wanted a part of the wall where they could mix. And it's also a difference between Orthodox Jews and the progressive Jews. So the ones protesting were the progressive Jews, and they said they wanted a bit more of the wall. And there's quite a few arguments about, like, the Orthodox Jews think that the progressive Jews got too much of the wall, and the progressive Jews think they didn't get enough. And one of the funny things our guy did say was, if you have two Jewish people, you have three Jewish opinions, because they just love to argue. They were his words, not ours.
Yeah, his words. And like we said, he is Jewish himself, so we'll take his word for it.
Now, only the men can read directly from the scripture. The women aren't allowed to do that. They have to take their own book inside. So there's lots of unequal kind of rules for men and women. But, you know, I think that's going to really come into some arguments soon, especially with the way that the world's turning. You know, women are becoming way more equal with men now. So I think, I don't know, tradition versus modernity. I don't really know what's going to happen there.
Yeah, it's changing, though, isn't it? The world is going in the right direction. Some places quicker than others, but it is changing. But yeah, so, and that's the Western Wall, or the Wailing Wall, is also where you see people, they actually put their prayers on bits of paper, fold them up, and they put them in the cracks of the wall, don't they?
Mm.
So that is where that is in Jerusalem. We got to see that, which I thought was quite interesting.
Just one more thing. I know we keep saying we're going to finish with Jerusalem, but I wanted to say that I was pleasantly surprised with how the four quarters do kind of live in harmony. Obviously, things are going to be going on. I was surprised how harmonious it was.
Yeah.
But another funny thing that the guy did tell us that it was just crazy. So there's part of the tour where he takes you to a really kind of momentous place linked to Jesus. I can't fully tell you what it is because I can't fully remember. I don't want to get it wrong. But there's like this church where they have Italian Christians there, and then they have Catholics and
Ethiopian Christians as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of them that kind of reside in this place together, but they all have their own little spot, and it's all divided by like the tiles on the floor. And they clean it a lot, and it's a religious thing. They want to clean it. It gets them closer to God, and it's, you know, cleaning their space. It's a very religious thing to do. But there's fights that happen, full-blown punch-ups happen in this place. It's just absolutely insane. But coming from such religious people, it just doesn't make any sense. But if one of them kind of uses their mop to clean one section, like a third of the other's tile, they'll start having a fight.
It kicks off.
It really does kick off. And our guide told us that you can go on YouTube and see some videos. And I did do it. I didn't find any juicy punch-ups, if I'm honest. But the things he was telling us was just crazy, that they really are just so angry with each other. And some of them come from the same religion.
Yeah, just slightly different versions of that religion. But it just shows people take this stuff very seriously. And stuff can kick off when you've got people in a relatively small space all living together, but from different religions. Stuff's bound to kick off. But you're right, generally, they do actually live together quite harmoniously.
We are all running with the lonely, but California raised us right. Kicking our feet routine, but what are we all trying to find out? Two worlds collide, paralyzed, just in time. Oh, two worlds collide, paralyzed, just in time.
Now let's move on to Bethlehem, or Bethlehem, however you want to say it. And this is, so from here we're moving into Palestine. So we had to go through kind of checkpoints through the wall. So we were on the other side. We didn't have to get off and show our passport details or anything like that. We did on the way back, which we'll explain to you. But we stayed somewhere very cool in Bethlehem, didn't we?
Yes, we found, well actually we didn't find this Airbnb. It was recommended to us by, we mentioned we couch surfed with a couple of Spanish girls in Jordan. That was in Petra. And yeah, they said, oh, when you go to Bethlehem, you need to stay with this family. So yeah, it's this Palestinian family on Airbnb. Ibrahim is the dad, and they live actually in a refugee camp, Dehesh refugee camp, and I believe it's the biggest Palestinian refugee camp. And yes, it is a camp, but it's not tents. Over the years and decades, they've built proper houses, and we had a nice room with a little balcony and a view. We had our own bathroom as well.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, and so at first when we knew we were going to refugee camp, we didn't know what to expect, but we knew it was going to be very interesting. And
yeah, we didn't even know if there'd be running water, electricity. You just don't know, do you?
Exactly. But what a lovely family. We had such an interesting time with them. We went round to some of their extended family's house. We just joined them, and then there's like nana, granddads and grandkids and all brothers and sisters, big family, and like 20 plus kids running around. And like, we're in Palestine, 20 kids running around, like being really loud, and we just, me and Amy, looking at each other thinking like, what is our life? Like, this, the things we're doing on this trip is amazing. But it was fascinating seeing Palestine. And yeah, Bethlehem again, a very important religious place, supposedly where Jesus Christ was born. And while we were there, we also got a chance to chat to Ibrahim, didn't we, Amy?
Well, you did, because I was still ill at this point. Oh, no, this was the first day I was ill, so yeah, I didn't really have a voice.
Oh, yes, I forgot. It was just me. But, you know, there's lots of questions we want to ask him. We want to know what's it like being a Palestinian person, etc., and what challenges they face. So we'll speak to him. You'll hear what he had to say. After that, we'll talk about a very interesting experience we had at the wall, which has been built, you know, to separate Israel and Palestine, and the checkpoint getting through that wall.
Hi, my name is Ibrahim. I live in the Dehesh refugee camp in Bethlehem.
That was Ibrahim, and we wanted to know where his family came from before living in this refugee camp.
Before the Israel, our parents lived in Palestine in 1948, and we Palestinian people, Muslims, Christians, and a few Jewish people lives with the Palestinian. And after the occupation, the Palestinian country occupied by British government, and the British government promised Israel, the Jewish people, there is land without people. You can come here to make your state in Palestine. And the Jewish people in 1948, they start come to Palestine, and they start kill the people, and they shooting fire, shooting bombing to the houses to push the people outside the lands. And after the people, they move to the West Bank. Some people move to Jordan, Lebanon, Syria. And we have like 62 refugee camps in these countries, in the West Bank, Gaza Strip, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. The people came here in 1948, and the United Nations gave them the tents. And the people stayed under the tents like 10 years. Without water, without electricity. And the people says, we hope to return back again. But now they are dream to return back. The Israeli government built the new state for them in Palestine. And they changed the names of the cities to Hebrew language.
So yeah,
let's get this right. So Palestine was the country before Israel existed. So right now, it's still correct to say that your country is Palestine, but at the moment, it's controlled by Israel. You're under Israeli occupation, and you use the same money as Israel.
Yeah, when the Jewish people came, before the Jewish people came here, we can use the Palestinian money, mm-hmm. but when the Israeli occupied Palestine, we used Israeli money. And there is a lot of countries support Palestinian and a lot of countries support Israeli. For example, the British support Israeli, US support Israeli, a lot of countries in Europe support Israeli. And the countries support Palestinian like Jordan, Egypt, Lebanon, Syria.
Okay. So, what are the problems that Palestinian people face?
When the Israeli occupied Palestine, we have a lot of problems. They start putting the checkpoints. Nobody can move from his area. If you want to go to Jerusalem, you need permits from the Israeli government. And if your name is a blacklist, you are not allowed to take the permit to go to Jerusalem. And we are not allowed to travel because if we want to travel to Europe, we need a lot of papers. And it's very difficult for us.
And expensive?
And very expensive. The education expensive, the medicine expensive, everything expensive here in Palestine. And in 1993, when they make Oslo Accord, the Palestinian Authority came here to help Israeli in the security. And the life, it's more difficult. We pay two tax, one for the Palestinian Authority, one for the Israeli. And a lot of checkpoints. The life very, very difficult. If we want to go to another city in the West Bank, the soldiers stopped you like twice through your way to go to another city in the West Bank. In Palestine, when the Israeli make the checkpoints and when the Palestinian Authority came to Palestine, no jobs in Palestine. The people choose to work in Israel because there is more money to be the situation good for them. But if the Palestinian workers, they won't go to work in Israel, they must to wait 2 hours in the checkpoint, and they must to return back at 7 in the evening because we are not allowed to drive in Israel, not allowed to sleep in Israel, not allowed to live in Israel.
Now, we will come back to Ibrahim, but we just wanted to stop at this point and explain about the checkpoints and the Banksy Hotel that's there, because we actually went through the checkpoint ourselves. Granted, we went on the weekend, so there were pretty much no people there because people weren't going to work. But we thought it would be really fascinating to go through, and we needed to get back to the other side into Israel in Jerusalem. Now, the checkpoint we went through was checkpoint 300, which is one of the most famous ones. What did you think of the experience, Nick?
Well, yeah, really fascinating but horrible experience. And we went when there's no one there, so I can only imagine at rush hour when, as Ibrahim's saying, they have to wait 2 hours sometimes, they're really crammed. Go on Google or YouTube, I should say, and just see some videos of these Palestinian checkpoints. They look horrible, they're like prisons. And you can also see the checkpoint on a video we made, which, as you guys know, for patrons, they get to see videos of our trip. And this one, it is a fascinating video, and you get to see us walk through it, and we speak to a local man there as well. And we'll talk about this local man quickly. It's a Palestinian guy, he works on the weekend, and he was going through with us, and he just wanted to chat with us. He saw we were foreign, he wanted to know where we're from, and wanted just to tell us what his life is like there. And it is a hard life for him and Ibrahim's family face. It's not easy going into Israel and, having to go through these checkpoints all the time, and they're being monitored, and they've got curfews and things like that. But this guy, he was such a nice, friendly guy. And at first, he helped us with our bags, okay? And we don't know this guy. And he didn't know at the time, but he's holding our bag with, all of our expensive equipment in it. And we're like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? But it turned out he just wanted to help us. And when we got through the checkpoint, he paid for our bus fare as well to Jerusalem. And he said, and we insisted, no, we'll pay for your bus fare. And he said, no, this will make me happy to speak to you guys, tell you about my life and my family.
And practice his English as well.
Practice English. And we were just at this point, we were rightfully so. We were feeling very bad for the people who were stuck in this situation. And that there's both sides have done wrong in this. There's been violence on both sides. But at the moment, it looks like, the innocent kind of civilians of the Palestinians
they've got a tough life. And this checkpoint, yeah, it was a bit horrible. And there was a big wall, a bit like what I imagine the Berlin Wall used to be like. But yeah, what did you think of it, Amy?
Yeah, it was tough to walk through checkpoint 300. I mean, out of every place I've been, it's the most prison-like place I've ever been, because I've never been inside a prison. As we walked through, yeah, it was a bit like an airport as well, where you have these detectors that you put your bags through, and our bags didn't fit, so we had to like take stuff out of our bags. They were really small, and fit them through. And like you said, this local guy was helping us, and it was so helpful. But one thing I do want to comment on, and I can only speak about my experience, I'm sure it's not like this every time, but when we was in Israel, I found Israeli people to be very polite, very nice, very kind, generous people. But whenever we was walking through a border point or a checkpoint, I have never met people so rude in my life.
Yeah, they weren't nice, were they?
They were not nice at all. And these are young kids. They're kids definitely even compared to us. These are people who are on their national service. And now, obviously, we don't know if they're told to be like this and to be very cold, but I was never looked at. Never looked at in the eye when I was spoken to. I was shouted at. Well, I wasn't looked at in a way where you talk to someone, you look at them in the eye, you're given dirty looks. You know, I'm not saying that we should be treated any different, but to a certain extent, you can understand why they would act like that to Palestinian people.
Yeah, like they're enemies, really.
Yeah, like they're enemies. But, well, maybe they were thinking that we were enemies because we were British. I don't know. But they were very rude, and it's this whole prison-like environment where prisoners versus guards, and they want you to feel like you're lower than them and all of that. And that was just my experience, and I can only comment on that. But I thought that was quite a shame, because I found Israeli people to be very polite and nice.
Yeah, we experienced lots of kindness and generosity on both sides.
Yeah, we really did. That was a bit strange walking through there. But yeah, let's talk about the Banksy Hotel. I didn't know this existed until we were at Ibrahim's house and he told us about it. And he was like, what? You don't know about the hotel? And we was like, oh, okay, like, let's go see it. So he drove us to the entrance. Now, I'm sure a lot of you know Banksy, the artist, the street graffiti artist. He's known for his political work. And yeah, he uses art to comment on his political opinions of almost every country, really. It's not just England where he's from. He does a lot of stuff about Trump and all that sort of thing. I'm sure you know him. You must do. And so he's got a hotel there, and it's amazing. On the outside, you see this monkey dressed in a like a red coat.
Yeah, like the people who take your bags. He's dressed as like one of them.
Yeah, like a bag boy.
Yeah.
And they have people at the door. They open it for you, and there's these red curtains, like theatre curtains, that you walk through, and suddenly it opens up into this kind of dining room, and it's really cool. So you've got Banksy's work all on the walls. There's massive like CCTV cameras.
Yeah, to demonstrate that, you know, you're always being watched by the man. There's a picture of Jesus Christ with like a sniper, like laser on his forehead.
And there's clocks there as well. So, you know, when you have three clocks next to each other with the different time zones, but he's got his famous rats running along them. And one of my favourite elements of the room is there's this big bookcase.
Amazing.
And yeah, it's just this one big bookcase, and it just looks like there's loads of different titles and books there, but it actually opens into a door, and that's how it turns into a hotel. You walk through, and you all see this on the video. We didn't stay there, but we were allowed up to one of the rooms. And yeah, once you walk into the room, it's just amazing. So you walk through, and there's graffiti all on the walls, but in a really classy way. It's not in a tacky way. And then there's a fake TV there. And on the front, it's CNN, and it's just one picture on the TV. It doesn't move. It's not a real TV. And it's CNN commenting on the political violence that's going on. And this hotel is known for their kind of strapline is the worst view in the world, because you look out the window and you see this massive, giant, grey, awful, horrible-looking wall that separates the Palestinian people from the Israeli people. And it's really shocking to look at.
Yeah, so that's a must-visit place. I think most of the people there were just like us visiting the hotel, and we're not actually guests. We asked, actually, how much it is to stay there. I think it's over, like, £100 a night. Like, you do pay for it, but what an amazing hotel. And it's just a big kind of political protest from Banksy looking at the situation there. And because the British were so heavily involved in creating this mess, you know, at least one British guy is trying to go back and do something about it, really.
And also another thing to comment on, it's not just a hotel, it's a gallery as well. So you can go upstairs, and Banksy has very kindly let local Palestinian artists feature their work there. I think it changes every time, so they kind of circulate around the different artists, but that's really cool as well.
Yeah, and the wall itself outside the hotel is covered in graffiti, mostly like peace messages, political messages. Some really amazing work there, isn't there, on the wall. Again, look at the video we made. There's loads of footage of the wall, and it looks it's quite horrible but quite amazing at the same time. A lot of Rick and Morty on the wall.
I was going to say, there's a lot of Rick and Morty on there. You can see Trump, you can see
Morgan Freeman,
Mark Zuckerberg's on there, and they're kind of all saying messages, and like very sarcastic messages. And yeah, it's a really, really incredible place, and we learned a lot while we were there. If you're nearby, please, even if you're 3 hours away, it's so worth going to. It was one of my favorite parts of the trip.
Yeah, it was amazing, mind-blowing. So we'll get back to Ibrahim, and then afterwards, Amy doesn't know this, I'm going to do a little sum up of what I think of the situation, because obviously Ibrahim's given his side, the Palestinian side. After being to both countries, I'm going to sum up what I think, because then we're going to be talking about Tel Aviv, which is very much away from all the conflict, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and just to let you know, we did try to talk to a lot of Israelis about the situation, because we want to keep the podcast balanced. It was very difficult to get Israeli people to speak. And I mean, you know, take your opinion on that. We did ask a lot of people, but people were just quite shy. There was a few reasons, you know, they didn't know enough about the situation, but they, you know, everybody does national service, so they all know something.
I think what it was, they didn't really want to go on record, like recording, saying something. They gave us their opinions, and that's what I'm going to go into soon, some Israeli opinions that I've heard, you know, secondhand, but they didn't really want to go on record, which I get. It might come back to bite them on the arse later. I don't know. So Ibrahim is about to explain a little bit more about the West Bank, and this is actually split into three areas, area A, B, and C.
West Bank, it's the cities in Palestine. This is the cities in Palestine. For example, we have Bethlehem, Ramallah, Hebron, Jericho, Jenin, Nablus, Tul Karim, Qalqilya. This is the cities in Palestine. We say West Bank because West Bank, it's not country. Our country, it's named Palestine. Palestine, I mean, it's all Israel, not just in the West Bank. And when they make the agreement Oslo, they cross the West Bank three areas, A, B, C. A, under Palestinian Authority control. B, Palestinian Authority and Israeli control. C, Israeli control.
Yeah, so even parts of West Bank still, part so C, is that right, is yeah. Still very much Israeli-controlled area C. They can do what they want in area C, Israeli people.
Yeah, because they want land without people in area C.
Yeah.
For example, if the people want to build the new houses, they cannot. They need permits from the Israeli government, and it's impossible to give them.
Yeah.
Because they need lands without people. Because there's a lot of Jewish people lives in the Europe, in UK, in USA. The Israeli government, they led them to come to Palestine, to live in Palestine.
And two more questions. So something else you've mentioned, the Palestinian Authority, so who are kind of in control, who run mm-hmm. Palestine. But even them, they work for the Israeli government. Is that right? So really, Israel are still in control.
Exactly. The Palestinian Authority, I told you in the beginning, they came just to help Israel in the security, and they take Palestine like company for business, because now the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, 23 years, what do for us? Nothing. The life expensive, education expensive, the medicine expensive, and no jobs, and a lot of checkpoints from the Israeli, because the Israeli government say you have Palestinian Authority, and the Palestinian Authority, they must help the people here.
But they don't. Yeah. So what do you want to happen in the future, and what do you think will happen in the future?
In the future, in Palestine, it's dark. No solution. Just there is a few years quiet, and then there is another problems. Now, if the Palestinian people, they won't make problems, they must to make two problems. With the Palestinian Authority, second with the Israeli government. Because the Palestinian Authority corrupt, and they stopped all the helping on Gaza Strip for the people. Because a lot of people in Gaza Strip, they need operation in the hospital in Jerusalem, and the Palestinian Authority stopped all the babies for them because Gaza under Hamas control.
But I guess what you want is you want your country back, but Israel and the Jewish people, they won't leave, but that's what you want. Yeah, you want your country back.
We hope to return back. We hope to return back to our villages, to our lands, but it's difficult now. It's very, very difficult because the Israeli government don't like, the Palestinian Authority don't like, U.S. don't like, there is another Arab country they don't like. And the solution in Palestine, we didn't know. For example, I live in the refugee camp. Now we are 70 years in this camp. The United Nations rent the land of the camp from Jordanian government 99 years. After 99 years, we don't know what happened. And when you built the house, you need lessons from the UN in the camp, and they write, you can live, but the land not for you.
Yeah, so where we are now, we're on a refugee camp.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're allowed to live here, but technically, legally, you don't own this house. Is that right?
Exactly. Just we stayed here a few years, we don't know how many years, but we must return back. And we say we not lose the hope.
And I think that's a really strong line. We should not lose hope.
Yeah, that is a strong line. And that reminds me of a YouTube video we watched. It was fantastic, called Middle Ground, where they got Israeli people and Palestinian people to sit down together and ask each other questions. And one Palestinian guy said that he doesn't lose hope because think of what the Nazi Germans did to the Jewish people in World War II. Maybe, arguably, the worst thing that's ever happened in the world. But now you've got an Israeli embassy in Germany and you've got a German embassy in Israel, which proves that they've put it behind them. The two countries now work together. So that's what gives the guy hope. So there was strong stuff from Ibrahim. I want to give my view of, like, from both sides, if you want to hear it, Amy.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear what I think?
I do want to hear what you think, Nick.
Because I do actually have sympathy for both sides, because us, the British and the United Nations, started this mess. We told the Jewish people to go, you know, here's your own country, here's Israel, and then just left them to it, to deal with it. And ever since, the Jewish people have had problem after problem after problem, because they've been told to go to this land, and once they're there, they have to defend it with their lives, because they are literally surrounded by their enemies. They're surrounded by so many countries that don't want them to be there. So after the horrors of World War II, they've now got to constantly, like, defend their land. And speaking to Israeli people, yeah, they have to do a lot of national service. They all don't want to do that. It doesn't sound like much fun. And one of our friends there said that any day you could get a phone call saying, we're at war again with so-and-so. And, like, that's no way to live sustainably, is it? To always be worried that it's going to kick off any day. But of course, the Palestinian people have had a really raw deal in all of this. And, you know, what they think is rightfully theirs, they were there first. They just want their land back. And they've been forced away from their homes, living in refugee camps, can't move around Israel, the country. All the good jobs are in Israel, but it's so tough to get into Israel and back again. It's a horrible situation. And us in Britain or in Europe, we're all, at the moment, we're all banging on and complaining about Brexit as if it's the most important thing in the world. Trust me, compared to what these people in the Middle East have to put up with, in Europe, in Britain, like, we don't have problems. We have it good. And we're all arguing about whether we should be in Europe or not Europe. We should feel lucky that we're in Europe anyway, full stop. Like, we have a good life in Europe. Yeah, it's not perfect, but compared to these people, it's fucking good, you know. And we're complaining about whether we're in the European Union or not. I think it's quite embarrassing, to be honest.
Wow. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I think we saw a lot of suffering on kind of both sides, really, but we also saw a lot of generosity and absolutely lovely, beautiful people on both sides.
Yeah, we did. We really did.
And the main thing I got from it was just the local people, the civilians, don't want this on both sides. They want to just have some sort of resolution and not have to go through all of this pain. But once again, the governments are in control. They're the ones doing this. They're the ones constantly arguing and not coming to any sort of settlement. And again, they're ruining people's lives. And they're the people that should feel bad, the governments.
For sure.
99% of people are the innocent victims. And I've heard Israelis also say that they've tried, you know, they've tried talks with Palestine. They tried to say, okay, let's compromise, let's do this, let's do that. And apparently they just always come back and say, no, we want everything or nothing. But the Israeli people have also said to me, how do we know that's true? That's what we're being told by the government. How do any of us know what's true? We don't, do we? We only know what we're told. So it's a very big, complicated mess caused by countries that don't even live in that part of the world, you know, caused by United Nations, America, the, you know, Britain. So it's a really horrible situation over there. We can't see a solution in sight, and it's really sad.
But, and that's a very big but, there is so much good in both places as well. And we can't stress that enough. We absolutely loved it. It was educational. We saw beautiful landscapes, beautiful people, amazing food.
Yes, both places.
And I really, really, really would recommend going there. As a tourist, it's great. You know, there's lots to see. Like I said, lots to learn. And it really is a fantastic place. And that's why this is all such a shame, because it could be, well, I mean, it is a brilliant country, both sides. It's difficult to say both are a country, you know, all that political mess, whatever. Israel and Palestine are both brilliant places, and we would recommend that you go there.
Yeah. Right, we're going to lift the mood, aren't we, Amy?
We are, and we're going to have a few laughs on this bit, because our game for this month is called Hummus Be Joking. Get
Come
it?
Come on, that's one of the best.
Hummus? Hummus Be Joking? Yeah.
How it's going to work, we are going to take it in turns to tell jokes, and then we are going to get you guys, the listeners, later on to decide who was the funniest. So you guys can message us on all of our social medias or our email address, you know, get in touch anyway to tell us who you think was the funniest. So Amy, are you ready to laugh?
No, because I'm not going to laugh at your jokes.
Exactly. So. Well, we'll see. We'll see about that.
Okay. So to get started, are you going to tell the first joke?
I'll go first.
Oh, also, we are on camera right now, so we are making this into a video as well for our patrons out there. So if you want to get involved, if you want to see the video and all the other videos of our trips, then get involved. Go on patreon.com/whatthefoe. So you're trying to make me laugh?
I'm trying to make Amy laugh. Prepare, Amy, to shit yourself laughing.
Okay.
So, Amy.
Yep.
I was walking down the road the other day, and a man threw cheese at me. How dare he?
Okay.
I'm starting off tame.
Okay. I'm not sure if you're going to get this one. I'm not sure if you're intelligent enough. Right. Okay. I wanted to post a joke about sodium, but I was like, nah, people won't understand it.
I don't get it.
You don't get it?
No.
Nah.
N-A.
N-A.
Very clever.
A sodium, mate. So.
What is it? The periodic table.
Yeah.
Didn't get that one. Okay. So no laughs.
Okay.
Amy, I used to be indecisive, but now I don't know.
That's awful. That's truly, truly awful. I thought he was going to bring some good jokes today.
Just you wait. I'm warming up.
Okay. Okay, I'm stepping it up a notch. How in hell do you get dick from Richard? You ask him nicely. Oh, got a chuckle there.
That's okay.
Okay.
You ask him nicely.
Yeah.
All right, better.
I feel like you just laughed there.
Yeah, it was a little chuckle. That's better. You're asking nice. Alright, ready? This goes back to my childhood. At school, I was afraid of fractions. Well, half the time. Well, not exactly half.
These are really bad. These would never make me laugh.
Okay.
I feel like you should know me better by now and know that this is not my style of thing. If you want to win, you need to come with some dark jokes.
That's very true with you. Yeah, I was trying to come up with some snappy one-liners, but you're not a fan. Okay.
I think I'm going to get more of a laugh at this one as well. Why can't orphans play baseball?
Why?
They don't know where home is.
I'm smiling. Yeah, that's pretty good. It's clever. Again, a bit dark, but it's clever. I don't know where home is. Okay. You're crying already. So, Amy, I've got a question for you. What does Glasgow and Las Vegas have in common?
I don't know. What?
They're the only two cities in the world that you can pay for sex with chips.
Okay.
Do you get it?
Yeah, it was pretty flat. Okay. Pretty disappointed with your jokes. I thought you were genuinely going to make me laugh.
All right, well, I'm still getting warmed up. I thought that was good.
Okay.
You pay for sex and chips. Different kind of chips, though.
Yeah.
You get it?
Like fish and chips and chips like in a casino.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
You just didn't think it was funny.
Nah.
All right, cool. You're a tough one today.
What does a boy with no hands get for Christmas?
Don't know.
Gloves. Jokes, he hasn't opened his present yet.
I actually don't really fully get it. Obviously, I get he doesn't have hands, so gloves.
So gloves is a really crappy present.
So what about he hasn't opened it?
Jokes, he hasn't opened his present yet. Okay. He hasn't got hands. He can't open his present.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Was that a laugh? I think you just laughed at my joke.
Yeah. I only just fully got it. He can't
open
it.
But you laughed, though.
Okay, that was a little chuckle. But there's been nothing... The Richard one's all right. The dick one. But there's been nothing really good yet from both of us.
Okay, so on feedback, you're liking the sexual jokes, but not the dark ones.
I like the D. You know what? I quit my job at the helium gas factory. I refuse to be spoken to in that tone. Okay, you held back a laugh. But
no, I didn't hold back a laugh.
Yeah, you did.
No, I wasn't. That was a disappointed look.
Okay.
You're coming up with more dad jokes than I thought.
Well, I thought they might be so bad that you might find them quite funny. Nope.
Did Jesus die a virgin?
Don't know.
Of course not. He got nailed before he died.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, and we're talking about Israel-Palestine, so Jesus is very relevant. That's good on two levels, that joke.
I've thought this one through, Nick. I've thought this one through.
So the others I kind of found online, believe it or not, even though you think they're so bad. This one I made up myself.
Okay.
You ready?
Right, okay. That's just made me laugh. You got a point there.
You know, that feeling of joy when you throw a boomerang, it comes and goes.
You came up with that yourself. That sounds like a very dad joke you'd find online.
Okay. Not amused at all.
No, right. I don't think any of your jokes have made me laugh yet. This is quite disappointing.
Okay, we're getting there.
Okay.
Still, it's a slow build.
Are you going to just, like, bash one out at the end? And I don't mean masturbate.
Yeah, I'm
saving... Did you just laugh at my joke?
It's another one. Another point to you. I'm saving... I think the best one to last.
Okay, so you just got one good joke out of them all.
It looks that way, yeah.
Okay. You'd think the Catholic Church would be in favour of condoms, wouldn't you? Less DNA evidence.
All right, that's good.
Is that 3 points to me now?
I haven't been counting.
Actually, no, we're not counting because you guys are...
Down to the listeners. That one was all right. Best one so far. So I got a compliment the other day for my driving. Someone left a note on my car that said, parking fine.
Do we get to deduct points from you for laughing at your own jokes?
Oh yeah, that means if every time I laugh you get a point.
Really? Is that a rule?
Well, I don't know, it's down to the listeners.
Okay.
You're just trying not to laugh at my jokes.
If I'm honest, that was probably the best one, but it's not like I'm like, oh my god, that's so funny. I wouldn't really laugh.
Just you wait.
Okay. What do you call a cheap circumcision?
I don't know.
A rip-off.
Oh. Yeah, it's a good joke, but more painful than funny. A rip-off. That's quite good.
Yeah, kind of chuckled there.
Yeah, again, it's a good one. The sexual line is the way to go with these jokes.
You like sexual jokes, don't you?
Yeah, but that was good. Don't you think that celebrities around the world are instantly recognisable? So, like, you could show a photo of Madonna to, like, a poor little child in an underprivileged community, and they'd say, mummy!
That's pretty good, actually. Okay, you made me laugh.
Good.
I like that.
Finally, thank God.
What is it called when an illegal immigrant fights a paedophile?
Don't know.
Alien versus Predator.
That's very clever. I like that. Illegal alien, sexual predator.
Illegal alien.
Yeah, if you're a...
I'm a legal alien.
Refugee. Illegal immigrant. Yeah. That is good. I like that one. Alien versus Predator. Good. Do you know when the worst time is to have a heart attack?
When?
During a game of charades. That's all right, isn't it?
That was all right.
It's a little thinker, but...
Went as good as your last one, but that's all right.
Mummy. Yeah, I quite like that one.
Nice. Okay, this one's dark, so if you're watching the video or if you're listening to the podcast and you're quite a sensitive person, this is your warning. You might not want to listen to this one. Okay?
All right, I'm ready. I'm looking forward to this already.
What really brings out the child in me?
Don't know.
A miscarriage.
Oh, very dark, but funny. We can all agree that was funny.
It's a play on words. It's not about miscarriage. It's a play on words.
Literally brings out the child in you.
So you can't get offended. It's wordplay.
It's a fact, people. So you'll find this hard to believe, but I was actually really bad at school. I failed math so many times, I can't even count. Bad.
Very bad.
Little quick one-liner. I liked it. You're not impressed by these one-liners, are you? I think I've realised I'm one of the people that if I try to be funny, I'm not at all.
No, you in real life, I think you're quite funny. You make me laugh.
But that's not really what I'm trying to be. But now I'm trying to be. It's because they're not my jokes. If I actually came out more on my own, like the boomerang joke, I'd be winning this game.
Okay. Mick, why is there air conditioning in hospitals?
I don't know.
To keep the vegetables cool and fresh.
Oh, people. Yeah, it's okay. I'm not going to laugh at it, but I get it. Took me a while, actually, to get that joke. Your joke's quite clever. All right, so that's it. I think I already know that Amy was funnier. But maybe some people might like the fact of how bad, like, dad jokes mine were. That might kind of work in the opposite way, and they're laughing at how bad they are. Maybe.
I mean, it's definitely not my... You need to think about your opponent, what kind of humour they have. And I know you have quite a dark sense of humour, so I thought a few of them would get you. I found some much darker ones than that I just couldn't repeat on the podcast, but they were brilliant.
Yeah, we actually spoke to each other before. We're like, oh, we've got this joke, but I don't think we can say it on a podcast. It might be against like iTunes laws or rules or whatever. So we tried to find the ones that are most appropriate. But yeah, I think actually you were funnier. But actually, it's not up to us. It's the listeners. So yeah, like we said before, comment, social media, email us, whatever. Tell us who made you laugh the most.
After all those fun and games, we are now going to talk about Tel Aviv. Now, this was our favourite place in Israel, wasn't it?
It was. What a city. We'd heard from a few people before going that Tel Aviv is the best city in the world. And we're like, come on, really? But I can see why people say that.
Yeah. I'll be honest, actually, I was getting quite annoyed with it. Because so many people were saying to me, when we just arrived, isn't this place amazing? I like turned up for a week and now I'm here 3 months later. I love it. Right? But we got it so much. I was just like, oh my God, shut up. Like, this is annoying.
You're like,
but
it's now probably going to be shit.
Yeah. Like now I'm one of those people. I'm like, it's amazing. Like you have to go there.
So it's a really modern, clean city. It's got a great beach. There's so much to do there. Amazing food, nightlife. Like there's so many parties there. It's a very liberal, open-minded place. And it's all in contrast to Jerusalem, where like I'm not putting Jerusalem down, but because it's a heavily religious, it's not going to be very liberal. But Tel Aviv was the complete opposite. You can be whoever you want to be in Tel Aviv.
It's just its own little bubble, isn't it? So, and we were saying that it really feels like its own little bubble. Yeah, if you're gay, bisexual, any part of the LGBTQ+ community, that's absolutely fine. If you want to dress a certain way, that's fine. If you want to have your hair a certain way, that's fine. Like if you want to do something for your job, whatever. Like everybody just cool, everybody's chilled. It's like a really hipster place. Food is amazing. Right, before we go any further, I need to tell you about this, right? There's a market in the middle of Tel Aviv called Carmel Market, and it's a mix of a food market and a flea market as well, so you can get all your bags and, you know, your standard tourist stuff. The food in this place was amazing. Again, you can see this on our Patreon video of Israel and Palestine because we had a whole food day. So we were buying one thing from every place and sharing it and trying loads of different foods like shakshuka, which is really traditional food there, which is like eggs in this tomato garlic sauce, which is banging. We also had some Asian food. We had some momos there. Yeah. Really mix of food, but
the best.
The... What is it? Pièce de résistance?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Good French.
Was this synagogue. So it was an old synagogue, but it's turned into a hummus restaurant. And guys, I mean, I wasn't a massive hummus fan before. This changed my life, okay? So the hummus we get back at home is just a pot of hummus, that's it. Like, it doesn't even have olive oil in it.
Put a bit of bread in it and then that's it.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's okay for a snack, but I mean, it's not my favourite food. This is hit up to maybe my top five of favourite foods I've ever eaten, this bowl. So you walk in and you just get one bowl between two people and they give you some bread with it as well. And they put the hummus in, smack it in, spiral it out. They put a mix of spices on it, like paprika. They put raw chickpeas on it, onions, garnish it with like some real high quality olive oil. Oh my goodness. This was like sex in a bowl. I promise you.
It was. It was amazing. And we were just sat there with a bit of like this pita bread, dipping it in this hummus, mixing it with all the oil and the spices. And it was just so good, wasn't it? Like, we just sat there in silence while we were eating it. We forgot each other existed.
Yeah, we really did. It was so, so good. And since going there, we spoke to other Israelis who have told us actually that's not even the best place in Tel Aviv to get hummus. So we're going to have to go back and find these other places.
And Tel Aviv is also very good for brunch. If you want to go out and get eggs and avocado and loads of things, we had like a 3 or 4 course brunch, which was brilliant.
Good.
It was mind-blowing. And actually, I'd say for what we got, good value. I can't remember exact price. Maybe per person we paid between like £10 or £15, but we got a lot of food.
I think it was maybe even cheaper than that.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, it was very good. The food there is amazing. Like I said earlier, it's the best place in the world for vegan food. So obviously vegetarian as well. And yeah, the food was just so, so tasty. Really good for gluten-free or lactose-free, whatever you are. Go to Tel Aviv and you'll be able to find it.
Yeah. Now, one of the reasons why we had such a good time in Tel Aviv was because we met up with some friends we actually made in Jordan. So only like a week or two before, we got chatting to these people in the Wadi Rum desert and they said, oh, you should come to Tel Aviv. It was like, okay, that sounds great. Why not? So a big shout out to Amit, Mayan and Jordan. Her name is Jordan, but we were in the country Jordan. And we stayed at Amit's. He was just the best host. What a generous guy. And we had a very good time because Amit, he owns a bar in Tel Aviv. And he said, guys, like, you're always welcome in my bar. One night in particular is an open mic night. And we just had such a good party. Like, Tel Aviv is so much fun, but it was massively, the great time we had was massively down to these guys. So thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, and a little fun fact about his bar. So the previous Eurovision contest, Israel won. And the woman that won used to sing in his bar like every Sunday because they have this big open mic night on a Sunday. And it was so much fun. So, yeah, Eurovision contest winner.
We've got to give his bar a shout out. Yeshua?
Yeshua. So it's spelled Y-E-O-S-H-U-A. And I think it translates to something like Jesus.
Yeah,
or
because I was wearing the T-shirt that I got from the bar. It says Yeshua on it, but in Hebrew. And we were in an airport and a guy just walked up to me. He's like, are you from Israel? Do you speak Hebrew? No, sorry. He's like, oh, I just wondered why you're wearing that. Your T-shirt says Jesus in Hebrew. I didn't realise it was quite a religious statement, this T-shirt. But yeah, Yeshua, what a really nice bar. Good beer, really good beer, good bar snacks. So much fun.
And shout out to the people behind the bar because they were all crazy but awesome as well.
Yeah, we had a great time in Tel Aviv. But to keep the good times rolling with Tel Aviv, we're going to go back to Roger. Like we said earlier, as well as staying with our friends, we also stayed at Roger's house, quite literally, because it's his hostel and it's called Roger's House.
My nickname is Roger and I own and manage the hostel in Tel Aviv, Roger's House Hostel.
That was Roger, who you heard earlier. And we said to him, quite rightly so, we've heard that Tel Aviv is one of the best cities in the world, but what can you do here?
First, it's true, Tel Aviv is the best city in the world. The people who said that to you are definitely correct and right. And first of all, before what to do in Tel Aviv, the reason why Tel Aviv is so beautiful and the reason why it's the best city in the world is because of the atmosphere and vibe. It's a very safe city. You can walk in the middle of the night. We don't have any crime or something like that, like lots of European big cities or American big cities that are filled with crime. Of course, you can get your iPhone stolen in the beach, but we don't have violent crimes. Going to the beach and looking at the sunset is, I think, a must in Tel Aviv. After that, just wander the neighborhoods. Every neighborhood has a different character. Our hostel is located between Florentine and Avet Tzedek, two beautiful neighborhoods, one of the first in Tel Aviv, the first neighborhood in Tel Aviv that Jews lived outside of the Jaffa wall of ancient Jaffa was Avet Tzedek, founded in 1888. You'll see lots of little streets like alleys, like French European style of architecture, with little old houses that are more than 100 years old. And lots of little cafes and restaurants and a beautiful vibe. And on the other side of the street, you will see Florentine, which is filled with young designers, hipsters, lots of street arts, lots of cool bars, cafes, restaurants, and art galleries if you're into art, into modern art, young art. And you can find anything you want in Tel Aviv. Second reason is the club scene. Tel Aviv is known for being a central place for European DJs and DJs from all over the world to come to our clubs. We have some of the leading clubs in Europe for electronic music, especially techno, minimal, trance, and all the kinds of electronic music. We have famous clubs in Israel that every week host DJs from all around the world and famous DJs. The name of the biggest and most one of the best clubs in Tel Aviv and in Israel is called The Block. It's just located 20 minutes walking from Rogers House Hostel, and it's actually located in one of the floors of the central bus station. So it's easy to get there from all of Israel. And we have the Breakfast Club, and we have the Oman 17 Club, and we have lots of little clubs, like the half club, half bar, like the Kuli Alma, Sputnik, Buxa, Under 51, lots of places that have almost every night, even in the middle of the week, parties and gatherings. And that's another reason that Tel Aviv is never going to sleep. Every night you can find something. In lots of big cities around the world, even in New York, there's lots of places that are in the middle of the week just quiet and closed. And in Tel Aviv you can find stuff to do Sunday to Saturday every day. The vibe is different. In Jerusalem there is lots of tension in the air, and lots of tension between secular Jews and religious Jews, between Arabs and Jews, between all the religions, even between Christians, Armenian Christians and Orthodox Christians. They have tension there in the old city. So Jerusalem, if I can say it, is a city of conflict, unfortunately, but Tel Aviv is a city of the good life, the free life.
So tell us about where we are now. We are in your house, Rogers House Hostel. Tell us a bit about kind of where we are and like what activities you guys can offer, things like that.
This is a new hostel that was opened on March 2018. We are not a party hostel and we are not a chill hostel. We're a mix. So the ground floor is more social, more noisy, more like a party hostel. You can play beer pong every night, and we have happy hours every evening. We sell 1 liter of beer for 15 shekels. That's about 3.5 euros. It's very cheap. It's like the prices in Europe. There's no prices like this in all over Israel. And on the first floor, we have the rooms, the beautiful, spacious, very equipped, large kitchen, common area, common co-working area, co-living area, living rooms, sofa lounges that are more quieter if you want to relax, work on your laptop, read a book, or just fall asleep on the sofa in the middle of the day like you're in your own home. And on the second floor, we have another lounge with a TV if you want to relax, see a movie, or just read a book. The most important thing to do, I think, when you are going hosteling around the world, is always book directly. No matter which country, which city, always Google up the name of the hostel you want to stay that you saw in another website and book directly. Once you book directly, it's most common that you will receive a discount. Here, whoever books directly on our website, rogerhostel.com, receives a 5% discount. And he can reserve a bed and order a bed on our Facebook page, write us an email, or give us a phone call. And I would recommend all the backpackers, flashpackers, and travelers around the world to always book directly. Once you book directly, the hostel, the guest house, has the flexibility to change your reservation if you have a change in your plans. But once you are paying and reserving through another website, the hostel actually is chained, and the hostel needs to pay high commission, and he has no flexibility changing the dates because it's the reservation that was already made, and he pays for the commission.
Thanks to Roger for explaining the good life in Tel Aviv and about his hostel. And one fact that's just come to me is the full name of Tel Aviv is Tel Aviv Yafo.
Yeah, and that's because, actually, first of all, yeah, good advice from Roger about booking hostels. Go direct, people. Who knew? But, yeah, Yafo. So, yeah, Tel Aviv Yafo. That's because there is a very old, small part of Tel Aviv. It is the ancient town of Yafo. But we'd say Jaffa, but in Hebrew they say Yafo. And as Tel Aviv's grown, it's just kind of absorbed it. So the two cities have become one. So, yeah, the full name, like Amy said, is called Tel Aviv Yafo.
So that was the end of our trip and the end of this episode that we're coming to. But first, we need to mark it out of 10.
I think we should mark it as a whole, you know, Israel and Palestine as a whole, a place to go to for a backpacker. Do you agree?
Yeah, because it's too difficult to do it in other ways, isn't it?
Yeah, like putting them against each other or anything like that. And they're so intertwined. So I'd say if you're going to go to Israel, you should also go to Palestine as well. So let's mark the whole place together. So I think I am going to give the whole trip, the experience we had, a 9 out of 10.
Ooh, okay.
Whoa, so high. Because it was so fascinating. I had no expectations. I had a very good time in both places. It was sad as well, but like educational to learn about what's going on there. And then, like I said, at the end of our trip, particularly Tel Aviv, I was blown away. It seemed like a city that we could live in and have a very good time and a good life there. But yeah, there's lots of controversial things going on in both countries, like we spoke about. But as a backpacker, it's quite easy to get around. Small country, great food, great people. Whoa, 9 out of 10.
Wow, okay. And I would give it an 8 out of 10.
Oh, just a full 8, not 8.3675.
I was thinking 7.5, but from your analysis, I bumped it up to an 8.
Okay.
Because, yeah, I would definitely go back. I feel that I could definitely go back to Bethlehem and Tel Aviv for sure. I'm not so bothered about going back to Jerusalem anytime soon, because maybe because I feel like I've done it and there wasn't much else to see. But I think there's more to explore with the refugee camps in Bethlehem and just to see more of the area. But and I love Tel Aviv. I'd say it's in my top 3 cities in the world that I've been to so far. I love it. I just need to go back for that hummus, to be honest. And yeah, I just absolutely loved it. So yeah, I'd give it a strong 8 out of 10.
So Amy, we are at the end of another series.
Oh
my
goodness.
Series 3 we're at the end of. Wow, we've come a long way, haven't we, since the early days in Series 1.
Yeah.
So we're going to just carry on travelling Brazil. There is more coming, but we'll have a little break. Well, actually, we're going to have a break. It might be a couple of months until maybe 2 or 3 months before another episode comes out.
Really? I was thinking it was only going to be a month.
Okay. Well, there's going to be a little break, but in that time, we're still going to be doing loads of podcast work, so it's not really going to feel like a break for us. But I think the last time we took a break, it was a bit longer. But no, we will be back soon. And just, guys, thanks so much. Like, without you, there's no show. It's just us talking to each other, like a couple of maniacs. And it's good fun. It really, really is. So I've had a blast this series. Have you enjoyed it, Amy?
I really have. Yeah, it's been really good. And we've heard from a lot of you this time. We've tried to get a lot of you involved in especially our mini episodes by asking your opinions and giving you lots of shout outs. So yeah, thanks for getting involved.
And if you want to go that extra mile and support the show, be our best mate, you can become a patron. There are loads of rewards. Check out our website. You can find it all there. So you do get stuff back for your money, including the videos we spoke about earlier.
Plus, you can also have Skype sessions with us to ask any advice on your upcoming trips or anything like that. And, you know, one of the tiers is that we can send you a postcard from where we are, things like that. So
personalised postcard.
Great. Lots of really great things.
And, of course, we also sell merchandise. So, again, by you buying stuff, you're getting stuff back for your money. You get cool T-shirts to wear, show the world that you're a mother follower and that you support us. And, of course, we get a bit of money from that as well to help us carry on the show for as long as possible. So all this information is on our website. And, of course, you could leave a nice iTunes review. That's free to do. And you just get the nice satisfaction that you're being a good person and you're helping us grow.
And you can go to the good place. You can go to heaven.
The good place, Tel Aviv. Yeah, we'll see you guys in the next series.
Yes, we will see you in series 4. Bye.
You can get in touch with the show. You can email us at whatthefoepodcast@gmail.com. We are also on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we are also on Patreon. For more information on all those things, you can go to our website at www.whatthefoetravelpodcast.com.